Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Tom, co-founder of the Warner Edwards Distillery. We've won HSBC's Elevator Pitch Competition, helping us to expand and grow our company. We're passionate about our business, and it's great to see HSBC is too.
We approved 89% of business loans in 2015, and with £10 billion to lend to small businesses in 2016, find out how HSBC could help take your business to the next level. Search HSBC Business Bank. Based on lending approvals in 2015 for loans up to £300,000, subject to credit status.
Hello, I'm Matt Hansen.
And I'm Lee Hutchison.
And you're listening to The Nerd Party.
Talk nerdy to me.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hi, everybody. We're here trying another one of these new shows. If you heard us a couple weeks back, we did our review of Deadpool, and we had a lot of fun doing that. So we've been talking with Tristan, and as we're trying to set up the Nerd Party now as a network, in case you hadn't heard, then we are going to attempt something new here. So the name of this special show is called The Filibuster, and the idea will be, hopefully, that in the off weeks where Tristan and I are not bringing you a Senate floor, Lee and I will bring you one of these shows where we'll talk about either, you know, stuff that we talked about on the Senate floor but maybe haven't covered in enough detail, or if you listen to the Senate floor, you know that Tristan doesn't necessarily enjoy going to the theaters for all these movies as much as I do. But Lee does. Lee is a movie file, and if I'm not mistaken, lives just down the street from a movie theater, which I'm really jealous of. So in the off weeks of the Senate floor, you'll be getting a filibuster while we'll be talking about some movie-related item in greater detail. So Lee, thanks for joining me on this endeavor. Hopefully it all works out.
Thank you very much. I feel like the Roger Moore to Tristan's Sean Connery. So yeah, fingers crossed it's some big foos. It's some big shoes to fill in, but hopefully it all works out.
I think you're giving yourself too little credit with Roger Moore there, but
yeah, more of a Timothy Dalton.
Yeah, exactly. But that'll be a discussion for whenever we discuss the Bond films in more detail.
Oh God, yes.
Which I know we're going to do at some point. But today, although not a lot has happened in the nerd world film wise. The way Lee and I originally met is very similar to the way that Tristan and I originally met, which is that we both have a love and affinity for Star Trek. So while there hasn't been a lot of film news from like the comic book edge or the Bond edge, there has been quite a bit of Star Trek news coming out, which is fittingly so because, I mean, actually, Lee, I feel like we're getting more news this year than I would have even anticipated. And I know it's the 50th anniversary, but, mm-hmm. I mean, in the past few years, they've been pretty conservative about what they've let out. I mean, not a lot has been going on, admittedly, but it just seemed that the last couple of years after Into Darkness, there wasn't a whole lot of talk either with the new film or this new TV series that we're getting. And then all of a sudden, at the end of 2015, going into this year, everything starts coming out about the future plans for Star Trek.
Absolutely. I always feel that compared to, say, DC, Marvel, Star Wars, Star Trek's very conservative in how they like to break news, how they approach social media. It's very by the book, very, very traditional, I feel, whereas other people are doing big launch events. Star Trek, just every so often, just trickles a bit of news out, trickles a little trailer out, and just plods along. It feels very much it's still back in the old days compared to what we're used to nowadays with every other kind of movie out just now.
Right. I think part of that, too, is because Star Trek still has its more niche status than mm-hmm. those other properties you mentioned. But, I mean, I do hope that going forward they start embracing some of the new stuff. I mean, the new ways of marketing. Yeah. Because I do feel that as much crap as the two new movies get, they have expanded Star Trek's purview greater than it was 10 years ago, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely in a unique position, especially with the 50th anniversary, to strike, promote really well. I always think of an excellent point that last year we saw Chris Evans and Anthony Mackie on stage announcing the Phase 3 lineup, that we got Star Wars at the Star Wars Celebration, huge trailer, casting, all kind of showing up for these events. And then we have the Star Trek event last year in Las Vegas. No real mention of any of the future titles, nothing about the movie. They just promoted the new Star Trek book. That, for me, summed up where all these kind of franchises are at the moment. If you're thinking, like, that's all the fans are in the one place, the right time, let's make some noise, get it out there. But we'll see. Maybe this year will be a bit different.
I'm hoping, because this year, in case you don't know, the Trek convention in Las Vegas, which is the biggest one here in North America, usually runs, I think it's 4 days, usually runs from Thursday to the Sunday of usually the first week in August. This year they've expanded it an extra day.
Yeah, they've got the Star Trek event in Las Vegas that you'll be at. They've got a Star Trek event in New York, and they're having a destination Star Trek Europe here in Britain again, which I'll be attending. So there's never been a better chance to really speak to the fans, promote, get things out there. I mean, by the time Vegas and Star Trek Europe happen, I would expect things to be really underway with this new TV series. So fingers crossed we get some sort of promotion and appearances and really make it an event for the fans.
At that point, yeah, I think the focus will have to be the new series, because of course we're getting something before that. In July we are getting Star Trek Beyond, which, you know, the first trailer came out, caused waves of controversy, as anything from the JJ universe has caused. Although I think more so this, I think, you know, unfortunately, and I don't think it's deserved, but I think after Into Darkness, those who already didn't like the JJ universe got even angrier. So I think that they were going to be angry no matter what this third movie is going
to
do.
Yeah. I think that our fan base, and I don't want to sound disrespectful to my fellow Star Trek fans, is there seems to be a lot of negativity from the first real get-go with this movie. I remembered at the time, and obviously it didn't happen to be the case, but Edgar Wright, one of my favorite directors, someone I'd love to talk about one day, wasn't linked with the movie. And I thought, oh my God, Edgar Wright, Star Trek. I couldn't believe my luck. I was like, if this comes true, it will be all my Christmases at once. Obviously, it didn't come true. But the amount of backlash to Edgar Wright, one of the best film directors for geek genre movies out there, and he got all this backlash. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I don't know how familiar American listeners are, but with Joe Cornish was linked with it. Famous for 90s geeks here in Britain as being half of the Adam and Joe show.
Yeah, he's
and directing Attack the Block.
Yeah, I was going to say he's the one who did Attack the Block.
Yep, John Boyega's breakout movie. He is one of my favourite geek heroes. He was linked and fans were completely indifferent to him. And if anyone's seen Attack the Block, that is a movie that is ripe for potential. And I was really excited. So fans were backlashed against him. Then Justin, then Robert Orci was going to be the director. I mean, personally, from my front, I wasn't keen on Robert Orci as a director.
No, but the thing is, I wasn't going to crucify him the way that the other fans were.
I felt he got the role from being in the right place at the right time, as opposed to perhaps actual talent as someone that could really bring something new to Star Trek. So I, as much as I'm saying people should be negative, he was something I wasn't so excited about. But when Justin Lin was announced, I was really, really excited. With me, I look at his work, especially his work on Fast and Furious 5, one of the most fun, enjoyable blockbuster movies I've probably ever seen at the cinema. And I look at someone that can do an ensemble cast incredibly well. And that's what I want to see more and more in Star Trek movies. I don't think we've had that in movie upon movie, seeing a whole cast come together and get really a shared billing. And I can see him doing that really well. And I'm on board the Justin Lin train. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid on set with him. I want to see a Justin Lin Star Trek movie so badly.
I truly wish that everyone else was as well, because I hadn't seen the Fast and Furious movies until last year when the build-up to 7 was happening. I finally did watch them. And I'm like, okay, I think I get why this guy was chosen for Star Trek. Is, you know, a lot of people are complaining, oh, it's just going to be more mindless action. I don't think it's just that.
No.
I mean, I think that there is going to be fast action, but that's the state of movies we live in at this point.
Exactly.
But I did notice that for the first time when he took over, and especially for Fast Five, the rest of the characters, including the ones that don't get a lot to do in the other films, finally got more to do. And so I'm like, they probably hired him because he's good with dealing with big casts.
That's exactly. If anyone could see me now, they would see me looking like a nodding dog. You're preaching to the choir here. That is what I want to see in this movie. And I see hints of that in the trailers, that all these characters are really going to be stepping up and shining. It's not going to be Captain Kirk Spock show. It is going to be the Star Trek crew show. And that has me excited. I personally really was excited by the trailer. Yeah, you can focus on the motorbike. You know, that doesn't make any sense to me, but I don't have the context. So it's fine by me at the moment.
And it's 2 seconds of a trailer. I mean, yeah.
When was the last time that we had a really exciting away team mission movie? Why does Star Trek always have to be in space? It doesn't. Star Trek is a broad, you know, universe. Adventures don't always need to take place in space around Earth. The idea of seeing this team on an alien world with new civilizations sounds good to me. That looks like Star Trek to me. I don't know if people will say it's not Star Trek. Looks like it to me.
These people will say anything in this new film isn't Star Trek. And, you know, the complaint with the last two films is that they were so Earth-centric. Well, now that we're finally getting away from Earth, mm-hmm. you know, that should be satisfied. But no, we don't have the ship anymore, so it's not Star Trek.
Exactly. And something like that, I'm very curious to see. There's just
That's
so much.
That's never happened. That's never happened. I mean, one of the other complaint with Into Darkness is that it was a ripoff of Wrath of Khan. Well, as much as I disagree with that, you can't accuse this film of being derivative, because I've never seen a film or even a TV show where the main ship is destroyed and they're all having to deal with being stranded on a planet. I think that's what the story is. That's what it's leading me to believe.
Yeah, it looks like that to me as well. And that excites me. That is something bold, exciting. The idea that Star Trek should take place on the Enterprise is a good idea, and you know, movies have done it well, but think of one of the most popular, most appealing Star Trek movies to not just fans like me and you that will go regardless, but The Voyage Home. The Enterprise is in it for 30 seconds and the rest of the time is pretty much on Vulcan and Earth. I really want to see this team, no ship, no hope, using their wit and will to get out of a situation. That is what Star Trek does well.
And not only that, that's very TOS. I mean, like half of that's the other thing is, like, you go back and watch the original series, half of the episodes don't take place on the Enterprise. They take place on planets.
Yeah. And why not take advantage of something like that? With a ship, you're always going to have people all over the ship. You'll very rarely have everyone all come together unless everyone happens to be on the bridge to hear someone explain the plot. With a planet, everyone will have something to do, will be together. That excites me. I love the Enterprise, but I love these characters more, and I think this is a fantastic cast. And I want to see them in the environment, working together and really shooting for the stars. I think with Justin Lin and his work on ensemble casts, I think we really are going to be in for a treat.
And plus, let's not forget that it is, you know, even though it's not being directed by Edgar Wright, it is being written by his other half of Spaced, isn't it?
Yep, Simon Pegg. And for me, I think Simon Pegg is an excellent writer. I've followed him since the days of Spaced, a TV show he did here in the UK. And I really think he gets it. I know fans seem to backlash against him because he defended Star Trek Into Darkness when, for some bizarre reason, it was voted the worst Star Trek movie at
Star Trek
Las Vegas convention. Exactly. If I was Simon Pegg, I would be a bit upset and offended. And sometimes maybe he doesn't think before he speaks with fans. But you can't fault his honesty in defending the craft of J.J. Abrams, that crew that have put in so much work. Yes, it hasn't always worked out, some of the elements. I think we can all agree on that. But if we look at where Star Trek was when Star Trek Nemesis ended, when Star Trek Enterprise came to an end, then God help me, J.J. Abrams has done a fantastic job. That is a hell of a resurrection job.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, people have their differing opinions on Into Darkness, but I think 2009 is unassailably great.
Exactly.
It takes broad liberties. It has a few plot holes. What other Star Trek movie didn't?
Exactly.
But just the feeling that you got walking out of 2009 was so contrary to the feeling that you got when you walked out of Nemesis, mainly because when I walked out of Nemesis, there weren't too many people in the theater with me, and I saw 2009 with a nearly full theater.
Exactly. I can relate to that. And I'll tell you a story, Matt. I saw Star Trek Into Darkness in London with the Royal Albert Hall, at the Royal Albert
Hall. Oh, I'm so jealous, because that's the Giacchino Live one, right?
Oh, yeah. I saw the Star Trek 09 on the Thursday night, and I saw Star Trek Into Darkness the following night. Giacchino was there. Simon Pegg was there. J.J. Abrams had just come from Pinewood, from where he was shooting Star Wars, to introduce it. And see, people that tell me Star Trek Into Darkness isn't a good movie, then I wish they could have been there that night. Into Darkness, I completely agree. I had issues at first with it. I've dealt with them. I've got over them. I know they're there, but I embrace the movie for what it is. But there were several moments in that movie when seeing it with a live crowd at a live event showed to me that this was still a really good movie. That moment when the Enterprise drops underneath the clouds, has that beat, and then appears up from the clouds, there was a spontaneous applause around this 25,000-seated arena for this moment. And there were several other little moments as well where the crowd were applauding and cheering along. And that was something special. How many times have any of us ever had the chance to see a Star Trek movie with the sort of crowd that you would get filling a football stadium or filling a concert hall? To see the fans respond that passionately for the movie gave me great hope, and it justified to me the work they had done. Yes, it's not perfect, but it really resonated with a crowd, and boy, did they enjoy it. And I loved it. That Star Trek and 09 and Star Trek Into Darkness live are two of my favourite moments ever as a Star Trek fan and a movie fan in general. And I say well done to J.J. Abrams, because I don't think you would have got a crowd filling up for Star Trek Nemesis like that.
No, there's no way.
Sorry, go on.
There's no way. And, you know, it doesn't bother me so much that people say that they're not perfect films. What bothers me is when they start saying that the writers don't even try. Because they are trying, and J.J. Abrams is trying. Yeah, he's not a Star Trek fan, but, I mean, neither was someone else we're going to talk about in a minute when they came into Star Trek, and look what they did for the franchise then.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Stuart Baird, who did Star Trek,
yes.
Nemesis, it didn't work. Michael Piller, who did Star Trek Insurrection, someone that bleeds Star Trek, and it didn't work.
Didn't work.
It's really not a prerequisite for being a good Star Trek movie is someone knowing it or not knowing it. It's what they can do with it that really matters, what their vision is, what their skill set is.
Hey, Captain Kirk couldn't even make a good Star Trek film, and he's the captain.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, I've got so much respect for people that can take Star Trek and make it something that appeals to people more than just us. And someone like J.J. Abrams, and I think Justin Lin as well, will continue to open Star Trek up into new fans and new frontiers. And you know what? If people don't like these movies, that's okay. But don't tell me this isn't Star Trek, because Star Trek is now 13 movies, what, 5-6 series?
Well, it's going to be
hundreds of episodes. Star Trek is everything that anyone wants it to be. There's episodes about gender issues. There's war episodes. There's episodes that tackle racism. There's a movie about a whale. Star Trek isn't just one thing or one way of thinking. So please, please don't tell me J.J. Abrams doesn't get Star Trek. Star Trek is so broad that it can be anything we want it to be. If you don't like a certain series, I don't like Voyager. That doesn't make me a Star Trek fan. That doesn't make it not Star Trek. It just means it's not the right thing for me.
Right.
And that's the way we should think about it.
Exactly. When I bring up my issues with the fans, it's not the fact that you know, some of them don't like the new films. That's fine. What really affects me is not only the negativity I see online, but the absolute hostility that the fans who don't like the films show to the fans who do.
Yeah. And I think it's sad to see. that I feel that the Star Trek fan base is so divided, and I really don't know where that comes from. It's like people will make the argument that obviously from Star Trek 09, it's a new timeline. And people will complain, oh, it's not Star Trek because it's almost erased everything. No, it hasn't. Star Trek, the timeline is always constantly changing and twisting. What is the real timeline? Is it the timeline that existed when Zefram Cochrane did the warp ship flight himself? Was it the timeline where Voyager got home without help from Admiral Janeway? Was it the timeline where the Enterprise didn't go back to save a whale? The timeline is always changing. This is nothing new. This is, if you know your Star Trek history, it's always a change in timeline. There's no right timeline, wrong timeline. It's just always in flux.
Yeah, you know, and the people who complain about it that are the real hardcore geeks, right? So I tell them, go back and watch that episode on TNG Parallels. That's all that Star Trek 09 is.
What's the classic saying? Infinite possibilities. Possibilities and infinite realities.
So you mean from Parallels?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
infinite combinations.
That's the Vulcan thing, infinite diversity and infinite combinations.
That's the correct one. Infinite diversity and infinite combinations. That's Star Trek, and that's, you know, that's what it is.
Yeah, so, I mean, you go back and watch that episode, though, all the JJ verses is another quantum reality.
Yeah.
No one's destroyed any timeline. The prime line isn't erased. Yeah. If the prime line was erased, then, you know, Spock Prime would have disappeared.
Exactly. People say, oh, it's a complete reboot. No, it's not. The fact that there's got a thread from that old time.
If anything, it's a sequel.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. It's just a sequel that takes place in the past. For us, we need to, you know, especially sci-fi fans, we've got to think largely and, you know, with how things work. Yes, something can be a sequel and a prequel, it's perfectly normal. We see it all the time in comic books, whereas Star Trek seems to have a real rigid thinking approach to it. And it's just something that really baffles me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've got nothing but fingers crossed for Star Trek Beyond. I think it looks interesting. I think it looks different.
Yeah.
And I think that I'm hoping that they'll, you know, with Simon Pegg writing and Justin Lin, who supposedly is a Star Trek fan, directing.
Yeah, I've heard that.
That it'll have enough good stuff in there for the 50th anniversary. And before we move on to the TV series, just a little bit of friendly speculation. Do you think, because obviously I think we can tell from the trailers that we're saying goodbye to the 1701 in the JJ-verse. Do you think by the end of this movie we might get JJ's 1701A?
I wouldn't be surprised if they did, but I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't look like the Constellation class ship that we've got. I think they could really do something surprising.
But see, that's the kind of thing that makes me question. I mean, just be excited because I like, oh, what is the A going to look? What is the D going to look like in this universe?
Exactly. It really could go any way. And you know what? It's nice that we can watch a prequel / sequel where we really don't know where things are going to go. And I'm happy with that.
That's the brilliant thing about this alternate timeline, is that we're not bound by the 700 hours of canon that came before it.
Yeah.
I mean, this, you know, the Enterprise 1701 is getting destroyed 2 years into the 5-year mission. That didn't happen.
Yeah. Exactly. And that with prequels, with the position that they've put themselves in with this being kind of an alternative reality, lets them play with all the toys that they want. Look at the Star Wars prequels. People can debate all day whether they worked or failed. I'm strongly in favor that they failed. But that's because there's no urgency when you know how it's going to unfold, and it puts pressure on things to work its way backwards and forwards. With this, they can just do whatever they want. They can, you know, they've set themselves free and loose to do it. A doesn't have to meet B. If they want to kill Scotty off in this movie, they can do that. It doesn't matter. If they want to destroy Vulcan, they can do that. It doesn't matter. And that is such a liberating thing to see.
Yeah, that blew me away in the first movie.
Vulcan. Oh, yeah. I mean, no one saw that coming in. Boy, I think that's one of the most boldest moments I've seen in a Star Trek movie. And I think we're going to see some moments like that in this upcoming movie.
I think what's so funny is that you remember like a couple years before that, that really bad, it was almost a fan film, but that Gods and Men film came out.
I'm not familiar with it. I don't really follow fan films, to be honest.
It wasn't really a fan film because it was directed by Tim Russ and it had a bunch of the old actors in it. It's not very good.
No.
But it took place in some alternate reality where...
I bet the fans were raging at that.
Well, they kind of were, but it was kind of a crap story, so this time it was justified. But in that alternate timeline, Vulcan's also destroyed. And this came out in 2007, I believe. And I'm like, I was watching that, and I was like, well, that'll never happen in the real Star Trek
exactly.
movie.
Exactly.
Anyway, so that takes care of the film front, and that'll come out in July. And so by the time we get to the Vegas convention in August, that will have already happened.
Excellent.
But I think the biggest news that has come out since, I think it was the end of last year, it's finally happening. We're getting another Star Trek series. It's set to premiere 12 years after Enterprise went off the air. It's been a very, very long time.
It's been a long road getting from there to here.
I didn't want to say it, but you did.
There you go.
So we've had this news kind of come out piecemeal, and the first thing, of course, that came out was A, that it was happening, and B, that it was gonna premiere on TV in the States, and then every subsequent episode was gonna be on this CBS All Access, except for you guys, because I'm pretty sure internationally it's gonna be on TV.
I'd be stunned if it wasn't.
You know, that came out, and of course, the fans who are already complaining about Star Trek Beyond are complaining that they have to pay $6 a month to see the new series, when $6 a month is nothing.
No.
I mean, I get that we live in certain financial times, and it may not be for everybody, but, you know, me as a fan, I've spent hundreds of dollars on the Blu-rays of episodes I've already seen. You know what I mean? So
you're not alone there. I think the problem is that it is a tricky position, but a lot of people in now, that it almost feels that when we just say had Netflix, that if you had Netflix, that was, you had that and then you had your cable. But now people have all these different options, and people like CBS, Fox, whoever has all these different streaming services, why should they want to give everything to Netflix? If they want to make their own bit of money, they're perfectly entitled to do that, and I say fair play to them. Yeah, it means that people may have to think a bit more, do I want Netflix and Amazon Prime, or do I just want Netflix and CBS? It's just another option that people have. It's not ideal, but that's just sadly the world we live in now, and Star Trek isn't exempt from the real world.
Well, what makes me laugh, and, you know, I hate to be so derisive to the fans, although sometimes I do feel they deserve it, is that a lot of people, after that news came out, they're like, oh, they don't really care about Star Trek anymore, they just care about making money. And I'm like, so you're telling me the 50 years of Star Trek before this was a non-for-profit venture? They made it out,
exactly.
They made it out of the goodness of their hearts because they love the fans so much.
The famous thing that we've heard for years and stuff was, oh, I'd pay $10 a month for brand new episodes of Star Trek. It's that common line, and I've said it many a time myself. Oh, what I'd pay for new episodes of Star Trek a month? Well, here it comes. Say they went $6 a month. What's $6, Matt? Is that the equivalent of a hot dog and a cola, an In-N-Out burger, a cheap DVD in a bargain bin in a petrol station? It's not much. I would pay it, personally.
I would pay it, too. It just baffles me that somehow Star Trek was always made with this benevolent ideal in mind, and I think that people buy too much into the universe, because the only reason we got Next Generation and all those movies is because they were making money. They did good business. That's the only reason.
Why did Star Trek Enterprise stop? It wasn't making money. That's why Star Trek stopped. Star Trek is... Paramount's one of its biggest money earners, probably up there with Transformers. We need to, as fans, we view it as something that's holy and special. But to people like CBS, to whoever, it's money. That's the way to top up their till. And, you know, I'd be outraged if I wasn't living in the real world and accepted that's how it works. It's, you know,
right.
It's a choice people have to make. It's like cable. If Star Trek was going to be on HBO, That's still a choice people would need to make. Do I want to pay $25 a month for HBO to watch Star Trek? Do I want to pay $5 a month for Netflix? It's just the world we live in. And yeah, we can be annoyed if it doesn't go our way sometimes, but sometimes you just need to accept this is how it works. It is a money thing.
Well, and, you know, it makes me wonder, like, so what would it be like if it was just going to TV and they weren't going to put it on Hulu or anything, and you have all these people who have cut their cable cord, you know, what are they going to do now? That's the way it was before. We didn't have Netflix back then, so you can't accuse them of being exclusive.
You can't please all the people all the time. It's a classic saying, but it's true. Yeah, and it's the same with, as we discussed with Star Trek Beyond. You can't make something that appeals to everyone. Some people are going to like something, some people aren't. Some people can access something, some people can't. UPN back in the day, if I'm quite right, was a cable network.
Yeah, it was trying to be another new network. So here in the States, before we had ABC, CBS, and NBC, those were the three original networks. Then in the 80s, Fox became the fourth network that we had. And UPN was the fifth. So they were trying to make another regular network. But everybody didn't have it at the beginning.
Yeah. And it's the same here in the UK. Voyager started off on what you would call as a normal TV service on the BBC. And then as the seasons went on, and likewise with Deep Space Nine, they were on cable channels. I think Deep Space Nine has always been on a cable channel here. Same with Enterprise. It's always been on a cable channel here. Sky. It's nothing really new as far as I'm concerned. I'm curious as to how we'll get it in the UK. But by hook or by crook, I will be watching that ASAP anyway. So it's however they choose to do it.
I can hear Tristan screaming at me, "You're spending too much time on one thing. Keep going." But so we got that news back in November, I believe. Then I think just last month. So we had the news back in November and everyone's grumbling for a few months. And then next month we start putting the writing staff together. And I think, I almost wonder with the choices that CBS and Alex Kurtzman and whoever is making, they're like, "Oh, you say you're not going to pay $6 a month for our show? Dare you not to pay for it now." So last month we had the announcement of the showrunner, and it's Brian Fuller. And for those who don't know, he's not only a Star Trek veteran, he first cut his teeth on both Deep Space Nine and Voyager, but he also is now an acclaimed showrunner, and he's done, even though his shows don't last very long, they're all award-winning. I mean, he did Pushing Daisies, and he did what I consider maybe the best horror, thriller, suspense show of all time, Hannibal. Which was mercilessly cut before its time, but man, was that show great! And so
don't forget the brilliant Dead Like Me.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I forgot about Dead Like Me. You're right. But the fact that we were able to get him as his, you know, even if his shows don't last long, his star is burning very bright at this point.
Oh yeah, that's quite a coup to get him.
That's a big get. And when that was announced, I was thrilled. I know for a fact that you said earlier during the show that you didn't care for Voyager as much, but if you look at his resume on Voyager, they're actually some of the better episodes. Would you say?
Yeah, I would definitely agree. Bride of Chaotic, I think we can all agree, is probably one of the most classic and iconic episodes of Star Trek Voyager.
And not to mention, he only did like three DS9s or something like that, but two of them are my absolute favorite, and they're dark and twisted. One is The Darkness and the Light, which is the one where Kira's old cell is getting hunted down by the burned Cardassian. And the other is Empok Nor.
I love Empok Nor. As a Garrick fan, it's one of my favorite episodes.
Yeah, and he wrote that.
That's right.
So the fact that he is now making the executive decisions on this new series, I think, is great. And people were kind of like, "Oh, it'll be the greatest Star Trek series that gets canceled in three seasons." And I'm like, "Well, then it'll just be like the original." And you know what? I would rather have three amazing seasons than seven mediocre ones.
Exactly. Yeah, seven. I think one thing that'll be interesting is how Star Trek fans acclimatize to what TV is now. I think the idea of a 24 season, 26 season is pretty much dead.
No, I think it's going to be a 13 episode season.
Yeah, I prefer a tight 13-episode, 12-episode season with little room for baggage. and it's something that really, every episode needs to be really thought out. Do we want this episode? Are we going for this episode? Yeah, I think that from how things have changed in those 12 years, this is the way it is nowadays. Yeah, I'd love more episodes, but I want the quantity. I want the quality, not the quantity.
Right. And speaking of quality, so not only did we get Brian Fuller, but now Brian Fuller is just one writer and he's the head showrunner. So he is now, I guess, in the midst of hiring a writing staff for the show.
Yeah.
And one of the first writing staff announcements was made just yesterday. We're recording this on February 27th. This was released on February 26th. They got someone who, I swear to God, I never thought was coming back to the Star Trek universe ever. Not because he hated it or anything, but because, you know, he's now at a point in his career where, you know, he is an older gentleman, and I thought he moved on. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad that he hasn't, and that person is Nicholas Meyer. Yes.
Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
Yes, that Nicholas Meyer, the one who directed Star Trek 2 and 6 and wrote part of 4.
And also wrote Star Trek 6, and even though his name isn't on the credits, he was the man that brought together Star Trek 2 from all these different scripts in what, the space of 7 days? So that man has one of the best resumes in Star Trek.
And might I point out, very similar to someone else we discussed, not a fan of Star Trek when he started on the movies.
Wasn't a fan at all. And look at the man. I've always made the argument that Star Trek was saved by Nicholas Meyer.
It was.
Yeah. We had the success. Motion picture was a financial success, but that model couldn't continue. That visual, that style of writing just wasn't going to work in the era that we had got to when it was competing against Star Wars. And Nicholas Meyer made Star Trek relevant. It made it something to be admired, something that was classy, something that was smart. It was adventure. It was swashbuckling. It was what a space drama should be. And I love Nicholas Meyer. I'm not ashamed to say it. I love the man.
Yeah, I mean, I get everyone loves Star Trek 2. My personal favorite of any of the movies besides the JJ ones is Star Trek 6.
Yep, I agree with you there.
And just because I like that political conspiracy thriller vibe that he gave to it. It was almost like the Manchurian Candidate.
Yeah.
But the fact that he's coming back now, his official title is he's a writing consultant slash, you know, writer on the show. So yeah. I don't know how great his contribution will be, but, you know, I was saying on Twitter yesterday, Lee, if Brian Fuller and Nicholas Meyer bring their A game to this show, this has the potential to be one of the best written Star Trek series of the 6 series.
And the thing is that they're at a special position now where they've got a blank slate. They can do whatever they want. They are the guys that are going to be making the crew, doing the pilot. They have got the blankest of slates. And that idea is just mind-blowing to me that these two guys are going to be the people that put together a brand new Star Trek series, write these new characters. That's just incredible.
It is, and that leads me to my next question for you, Lee, is that you say they're dealing with a blank slate. How blank of a slate do you want them to deal with? What are your hopes for this show? Do you hope they go back to the prime line? Do you hope we stay in the alternate JJ timeline? Or do you hope that we somehow, through story magic, we get a third timeline?
I think that it's best if they stay in the JJ timeline. And no doubt, I'm sure, knowing Star Trek, I'm sure they'll have a time warp episode in that 13 episode run where it'll be a new timeline on top of that, I'm sure. But I think it's best if we stay in the JJ timeline. Whenever they want to do it, however they want to do it, I don't mind. All I want, and you know, you asked me that question, and for most fans, they've probably got a wish list of things that they want. They want it set this, they want this sort of ship, they want this sort of crew, they want this sort of missions. It's been 12 years since Star Trek Enterprise came off the air. We've had 2 really enjoyable movies. All I want is a real quality TV show with good writing, a great cast. That's all I want. And however they want to do that, in whatever timeline, on whatever ship, whatever cast, I don't mind. I trust these guys to do whatever they want. Anything I think will not be as good as them guys can come up with. So I'm really excited to just, I'm just open to it, Matt. I'm not wanting to say, I think they should do this, this, and this. Please just make a good series, and I'll do everything I can to support it.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of started off in the same position that you did. I kind of, as much as fans would grumble, I wanted them to stay in the JJ universe just because I think as a writer, you only have to be beholden to the three films.
Yeah.
I mean, and then everything else is yours for the taking. Whereas if you go back to the Prime line, especially if you go after Voyager, then you have so much that you have to take into account. But, like you said, when Nicholas Meyer was announced and then when Brian Fuller was announced, I'm like, you know what? I could care less what timeline it's set in now. Make a new timeline. As long as it's good and as long as it's these two at the helm, I think it's fantastic. And what I really like so far is that they're taking the best of all of Trek world. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, because we have Nicholas Meyer who... For more or less represents like old Trek, the movie era Trek. Then we have Brian Fuller, who's a representative of 90s era Berman Trek, but you know the better one, the better half of Berman Trek. And then we have the show being executive produced by Alex Kurtzman, who helped write the new movies. So it's like the Star Trek all-stars writing team. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a few people I'd love to see added to that bench. I would love to see someone like Manny Coto. I think his work on Enterprise was incredible.
Could you imagine if they get him and, like, Iris Stephen Bear from Deep Space Nine?
Yeah. Would be amazing. I'd love Ronald D. Moore, but I think
he's
that's
busy.
Pie in the sky with Outlander. But I would love Iris Stephen Bear. I think even if it just to have him do one episode and then do a Blu-ray special feature, because anyone that's seen Star Trek special features know that Iris Stephen Bear is just a brilliant character. I'd also like new blood brought in, some new writers. One I'd be quite curious to see, I know some people might think it's a silly idea, but I'd love to see someone like Seth MacFarlane brought on board, someone that's maybe a bit of a comedian, something that can, and he's a fan as well, you know, we shouldn't forget that. I think he would do something really exciting, kind of similar to a reverse Mike Sussman, someone that went from Star Trek and then went to do work on American Dad and Family Guy. I think someone like Seth MacFarlane, I want a lot of variety. I don't want just really good science fiction writers. I want some people that have done really good work in comedy. I like someone that's maybe done some work with kind of romance. You know, just bring in, I'd love to see a really good writer's room with different sexes, different backgrounds. I don't want it to just be the classic male writing room. I think Star Trek in the past has suffered from a lack of female voices.
Yeah.
I really want that rectified. I want a nice balance. And boy, howdy, I think if this is the way it's going to go, I trust them so much.
Which, you know, there's speculation on who the crew is going to be. And I'm anticipating that that's going to be, hopefully, fingers crossed, they take advantage of the convention circuit this year. And that's a reveal at one of them is who the new crew is.
Oh, definitely. That would be fantastic.
But I'm sure you've heard the story that Brian Fuller thinks a few years back that he wanted someone like an Angela Bassett type for the captain.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? I would love – because even though, you know, people had their problems with Janeway, I didn't, but I understand. I would love to see another female captain. I think that would be a great idea.
I don't care if it's an alien, a woman, a male, transgender, anything. Just make it good. And I think Star Trek is in especially a position now where Star Trek's needed more than ever. We look at the political landscape just now, and it's hard not to, in America, abroad, see people like Donald Trump on the TV talking about race issues, LGBT issues in quite a negative light. And people say this message of Star Trek isn't important anymore. Now more than ever, we need to see diversity of all spectrums of race, sexuality on a screen, showing that, yeah, people like Trump, people of similar ilk that have their own bigotry in our world in 2016 will never win, and that's the Star Trek vision will happen regardless. And I think that's what I want to see behind the scenes, in front of the camera, is a rainbow of cultures, of human, alien, sexuality, sexes, and embrace that Star Trek ethos. I don't care how they do it, That's my only request, is that we have a rainbow of colors, characters, races. You know, I want that diversity.
Right. I mean, they're already on their way behind the scenes because, I mean, this is the first time that Star Trek's going to be showrun by someone who's gay. Brian Fuller is gay.
Yeah, exactly.
So I could see him integrating more diversity into it. I could see him bringing on female writers. Hell, I would love to see on bring on people who worked on Hannibal just to cut their teeth on science fiction. And now I just have this image in my head of Mads Mikkelsen as a Cardassian, which would be fantastic.
Oh, that would be good. And Gillian Anderson as our captain.
Oh my God, I would. Well, Tristan would die.
But
I would too. But yeah, I think there's a lot of hope for Star Trek's future, and I can't wait to see where it goes from here. I really, really am excited. I have nothing but high expectations for this new series, and I think they're going to be met. And I think it's going to be an exciting time for us Trek fans.
Yeah, I think it's time that Star Trek got back to its mission and boldly went where no man has gone before.
Yeah, and I think it's going to do that as much as, you know, you and I have enjoyed the new films, and I'll go see any Star Trek film. But Star Trek's always where its best medium has always been television.
Exactly.
So the fact that it's returning to the medium where I think it belongs, I think, is the most exciting prospect of all.
And we've got competition from Star Wars, Disney, DC. You know, Star Trek just can't Star Trek can't just rest on its laurels these days. It has got to work for the fans and to bring people in. And that competition can only be healthy and something that will egg both people on. If Star Wars does well, then that's going to push the Star Trek people to work even harder to do better than Star Wars, and likewise.
And I think, you know, Star Wars can, now that Star Wars is back, and Star Wars is back in a big way, I think if Star Wars was like the king of the cinema and Star Trek was the king of science fiction television, that's a world I'd be happy to live in.
Yeah. The return of Star Wars on the big screen, Star Trek on the small screen, it's like the 90s all over again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that I think that's about all the speculation for now, but we're going to have to revisit this as we end up. We're going to have to learn more by the time this year's over, because if the pilot is going to premiere in January of 2017, that means they're going to have to go to camera at some point during this year.
Yeah.
So I look forward to talking about that with you, and thanks again for joining me here, Lee, and hopefully this new show idea of ours works out and people enjoy it. And
It's been really nice to hear the feedback from everyone to our Deadpool episode, and it's certainly something I've really appreciated. It's to step into this network and become a bit of a new voice on it has been, you know, it's a bit intimidating, but the feedback's been really positive, and I feel like I'm joining not just a network, but kind of a family of listeners. So, you know, I just wanted to thank everyone for making me feel welcome.
I mean, you're more than welcome. I've enjoyed talking with you, and I think this is going to be a fun project to work on, and hopefully it all goes well for the future. So if you're just listening to us for the first time and you're just getting to know Lee, where can people reach you on Twitter, Lee?
Yeah, they can find me at Lee_Nostromo on Twitter and Instagram. And I'm sure if you want to be bored with hot takes on the American politics and what films I'm seeing at the cinema, I'm sure I'll fulfill those needs.
I mean, that's half of our audience, I'm sure.
Exactly. Yeah, I suppose, you know, fingers crossed they agree with me, or more likely to disagree, but who knows?
Well, it'll make for a fun discussion, of course. And you can find me at mhanson0207 on Twitter. Thanks so much for joining me again, Lee, and hopefully we'll have some fun with this project. Until then, this is the Filibuster saying live long and prosper.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.